Channel 2 Right, in beginning of the visit with Rick and Suzanne at lunch this Thursday, the 16th of September, 71. Channel 2 Right, in beginning of the visit with Rick and Suzanne this Thursday, the 16th of September, 71. Channel 2 Right, in the beginning of the visit with Rick and Suzanne this Thursday at lunch, the 16th of September, 71. Channel 2 Right, in the beginning of the visit with Rick and Suzanne at lunch this Thursday, the 16th of September, 71.
Now, you think Miss Mary feels better?
Oh, yeah. She's feeling good. She said she's feeling poorly. But she said, but I'm feeling better. And I stood there a minute. She said, do you want some supper? Marvin came through the kitchen right then, and I said, no, I've already eaten, but I'll sit here and talk to you a while. Marvin came through, and she said, we're cutting hay. And I said, well, do you need some help? Poor Rick, you're already into it.
Right first.
Marvin says, that's mean work. And he put on his hat, and she said, told Miss Mary, she said, he asked her if she'd be on over, and she said, yeah, she'd come right on over. He hadn't any more walks out the door. She turned around, and she said, you know, men are just helpless. They can't do anything for themselves. I don't know what they'd do without women. She said, they can't even go to the Johnny without us having to come along and wipe their tails.
Suzanne, you just pull the best out of people.
I'm Miss Mary.
She never talks straight to me like that.
And you know that's the way she talks.
No, I'm sure it is. Well,
oh, you do know that it is.
Sure,
yeah.
It is. Yeah. That's fair talk.
She just come right out and say it.
Sure.
Yeah, just kind of, she just thinks that's funny, and she just the way she thinks of it. She, when we went over to see Christine Polk, I guess it is, I asked about, they had this kind of conversation back and forth across the yard. Miss Mary's at the truck and Christine was in the door about the mullet coming in. Dorsey was going to have some mullet. Miss Mary said, well, she'd like 5 pounds. So we got off and I started thinking, well, Dorsey, is he the one that lives over there by that road in the Shirley Docks?
No.
No, well, it wasn't. That's a Bacchanal.
But it's just a little piece down in the trailer.
Yeah. She said, no, that's the Bacchanals. I said, well, they fish too, don't they? And she looked at me and laughed. She said, yeah, that's all they do, fish and make moonshine. That's all they've ever done, make moonshine and fish.
You never had her say that to you.
No, sir.
Anyway, so we drove on, but... while we were still in the kitchen there, she's telling me about the doctor. And she said, come here, I want to show you something. She said, the other day, I was in the bed, lying down, and the phone rang, and I got up to answer it. And I want to show you where I ended up, she said. And we walked in the little part of the kitchen there, over by Marvin's chair, between the couch and the stove. And she says, now you tell me how I ended up over here. I said, well, Miss Mary, what happened? She said, I fell 4 times. I'd get up, and it seemed like my feet just go right out from under me. My legs would just give way. And she said, and the 4th time, I just said, now you just
got
to
get up. Now, she wasn't sorry for herself.
Oh, no. She's just this big voice and lively and moving around. And she moves kind of slow, but she just... there wasn't any whining or anything in it.
Yeah.
She just kind of started off with it about Marvin being helpless, and it kept on in that character. And she said, I just told myself I got to get up. So she finally made it up and sat in the chair. The next day, she told Marvin she just had to go see Dr. Gibney down in Ocala. she went to him and said, she relates just exactly what she says. I says to him.
Oh, you know
she says to me.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Just exactly. And I can't remember exactly, but she said, I said to him, I've been to the doctors, and I've been all around Gainesville, and I've been in the hospital, and I've been to Dr. Daly, and I'm no better, and I just, let's see, and they can't find what's wrong with me. And I've been to a specialist, and I just came to cry on your shoulder. Dr. Gibbons, he said, well, let me see your medicine. So she handed him all her medicine. She took it with her. And he looked at it and came back a little bit and said, now, you've got the shingles and a flare-up of arthritis, and all this medicine isn't doing you any good. I want you to keep on taking these, but the rest of it you can just throw away. And I'll give you a shot, and you can come back Thursday. And so she said, so he gave me a shot, and I started feeling better. I went back Thursday, and there was a nurse there. He wasn't there, and the nurse gave her another shot. And she's still feeling better, so she called him Saturday, and he said, well, it looks like I'm going to have, you should only have one a week, but it looks like I'm going to have to go ahead and give you more. So you come back Thursday. So she's going back to get another shot. But she says, I am feeling better.
Oh, I called her one morning, Suzanne. And she said she was just feeling terrible. And she said she had been up all night. And you know the way I do. I said, what do you do when you get up all night? Isn't that the truth? And she told me. And you know, she felt such pain. And as she told it there, she just started crying. It hurts bad. So she'd been in pain. Now,
yeah.
You say
now,
you
the way she told me, there wasn't any, that was over, so.
Yeah.
She said she had the shingles. Well, her head itched. It's so bad, it'd like to kill me. And she scratched it and scratched it. She got sores up along her forehead, along the hairline. She looks at me, and you know, she gets this kind of sideways look. And you know, I went to Dr. Daly, and he wouldn't pay any mind to that. He wouldn't even listen to me. He didn't do anything about the itching. So Dr. Gibney told her it was shingles and gave her something to put on the sores. And she said, now the only thing wrong is my side hurts. It's just sore. And we got in that truck and drove over there, and I could see why. Because, you know, she can barely see over the steering wheel, and that truck is real bouncy and just. We went in this long, long road back through the pine woods, just two tracks and trees right up against it, you know, and she's in and out and trying to drive through it in third gear, which was too slow, just back and forth and up and down. I said, well, no wonder you're sliding. She said, yeah. She said, it's no wonder. And that's when we drove over to Christine to see if her boy was home.
Yeah.
And
I'll help. Hey.
Yeah, to help in the hay. She said, you know, you just can't sit around on your butt and wait for somebody to come help you. She said, when that hay's there, you just got to get it in.
You know, she sort of cries about that, but I believe if she had a little vigor like she's seemingly getting back now, she'd get somebody to help in that hay.
Yeah. So, well, she drives a tractor. She drive a tractor for Marvin.
Oh, I never heard of that. In the recent years?
Just yesterday.
But she wouldn't do like Faye?
No. She wouldn't walk around behind and help you fix things. She wouldn't help Marvin fix things. She'd drive a tractor, but that's it.
Well, Faye sits on the baling ties and knots.
Yeah, I know.
And she wouldn't do that.
His thought. She just said she wouldn't walk around behind Marvin and do things.
And she said it pretty strong.
Yeah, well, when we were standing there, and she said, we'll have to ask Marvin about getting Rick. Marvin said, well, they're expecting some help around 4 o'clock. But Marvin said, you all do what you think. Miss Mary just shook her head. She said, uh-uh. She said, that's not going to be my decision.
That's one of the finest things she said. She said, Joe George.
And then, you know.
She shook him at me, so I'm going to find
it. Uh-uh.
Well, now, that's, she's back in her vigor.
Yeah.
Suzanne. Isn't that marvelous? Isn't that marvelous? You give them up and think it's, you'll never see it again. And I'll swear to goodness if they don't come back. It's just like a resurrection.
Right.
Yes.
It is.
Yes, sir. You see, there's nothing wrong with her. I mean, she's got a lot of health and vigor.
Oh, yeah.
If she can just get over that pain, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
But she's not eat up with anything. And you took a trip with Cookie.
Yeah, he was by here. He was by here 2 nights ago in that rig to pick up your cows. Oh, was he proud of that rig?
Suzanne hadn't heard a word of this.
No, he came in. He came in about 7:30. It's 8 o'clock, yeah.
Well, you and I were just going down to bring the cows up.
Yeah, that's right, you know.
And we heard that rattle of an old
cow.
Yeah,
I didn't know what it was. I didn't know something was falling down here or something. And we come up, and there he was, you know. And he's got this big 68 Ford pickup, nice, pretty blue. And trailer in the back, just as clean. And I mean, I looked at that, and I thought, well.
Yeah, it looked
where could Cookie get this? You know, even if he got one, it wouldn't look that good. You look at that Cadillac. I mean, he drives Cadillac, but it's so beat up. And that rig was just as nice. So he wanted to take the cattle in that night. And I wouldn't particularly excited over that because it was 8 o'clock and it'd be late before we got it in. It's gonna take two trips. But he was determined. Take them in. Yes, sir. I've moved many cattle now. Yes, sir. And it's nice, cool like this, and they can't see where they're going. They're just easy to handle. So we ended up moving cattle. We decided to take those cows first. You know, got 3 cows.
Mm-hmm.
So we backed that truck up there, and so you know how that V there, if the cows stick their head through. We opened that up and then put a gate. So they, when they come through the V, they couldn't get out. Opened up the chute, backed the truck up, got the chute adjusted, ready to go, start chasing the cows up. Well, what we did was get the 2 smallest ones first, see, which just wasn't the thing to do.
Then the big one wouldn't go in.
And once we got him in there, a guy's standing there just cussing at those cows, and they just turn around and back up to him and let him have it. And he's standing there.
We had to go to the laundry.
Just covered. And then we come up with that last cow. And I mean, she was so fat, when we got to that V, she just wouldn't go through. And I just said, well, no, we got a problem. So you got behind her, squished her on through.
She did.
And we got up that ramp, the guy's standing up there on top. And those other 2 cows were like, they were coming to see what happened. So they stand there right in front.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't get that cow in. The guy's cussing and Cookie's cussing and I'm hitting the cow with the board and they're pushing and pushing and she'd move an inch and she'd stop and she'd back up. And she'd move an inch and so Cookie got behind her and I don't know what Cookie did but all of a sudden she went in that trailer.
Yeah, and you slammed the door.
Yeah, just slammed it just like that. Locked it up. And then Cookie and I got in the truck and off we went.
Yeah, I was supposed to go with him but I said Rick probably would like to go.
Yeah, he was standing on the ramp. I says, "You okay?" He says, "Am I okay?" "Well, just smell me." He was just covered. You were.
Oh yeah.
Cookie came out.
Yeah.
Clean.
Yeah.
He didn't have a. Well, he don't show it if he gets it on him. He puts it away in a convenient spot.
Yeah.
Doesn't let you know. And he got in the truck. Of course, first thing he did was lit up his cigar.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't have it while you're moving the cattle.
Yeah, he's all had his hat on, you know, nice shirt and pants. But I couldn't believe that. He got behind the cow and pushed and never got a bit on him. So we got in the cow and the truck.
So now, on this, you were going to try out your rattler.
Yeah. I figure I got a captive audience here. I got to try to sound this. And Cookie and I going in town and get something done. So we took off down the road, and I started talking about that truck. And he was, he's right proud of that truck. He just driving.
You got too far back. You ought to lean over if you want to do anything.
He come down the road there.
That's your balance forward there.
And he drove the truck like that trailer was just nothing back there. And that truck starts slipping all over the road.
Oh.
I mean, you know, not a lot, but I could feel it starting to go. And he's got that trailer back there. And old Cookie is, well, come on now, truck, you just settle down here and stay on the road. And it did. And he just like that trailer was part of his life back there. Just kept right on going. We got on out in the road. And I'm talking.
Hey, he ain't taking any chances on it. He fastens them.
You notice, yes, he does fasten it. He checks that back in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah, he's sure about it.
Mm-hmm.
But when he starts driving, he drives.
Yeah, we drove down to Ocala with him one time. Straight
yeah.
in the arrow.
We went on down the road, and, you know, when those cattle start moving around, you can feel them shifting. So he's come downhill, and he just starts pumping the brakes. I didn't know what he was doing. You know, I thought, well, we got to turn here or something. Then he stops, and the truck's rocking back and forth. I said, Cookie, what you doing? So I just quietened down, and he did. They just got moving.
He's seen the right smart, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He knew what he was doing. He was like king of the road in that truck. He was just as proud driving. It was so nice and clean inside. And I had to get in because my boots were all covered in manure, and his was too. He just opened up his ashtray and pulled out a cigar and started smelling the place up. And then he rolled down his window and turned the air conditioner on full blast. We just go singing down the road like that. So I was talking to him. First, he had to start telling me about his family and all his problems with his wife and all the misunderstandings. So I'm just sitting there. Every time I've been, you know, with him, he starts to do that. So I let him run through that.
You were the captain then.
Yeah, there's not much I can do but go, So we went on down. I was asking about the market because I don't know anything about it. And asking when they sell because we were taking them down for Monday market.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday night.
Lost some days here. And he's telling me they they sell on Monday and Wednesday. See.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, well, don't you have to be there for selling? He says, no, they'll take care of it. And I go, well, now we're going down this late at night, and the market's not till tomorrow. And he's telling me, if you want a price, you go this time. You take them in the night before, because if you wait late, you're tail end when the selling comes, and you just don't get any price.
Oh, I see. It just coming.
Take them to come.
Yeah, I guess first come, first serve basis.
Yeah, Marvin, don't you know, he said, Marvin takes his in the night before.
Uh-huh.
And they'll feed them for you if you tell them to.
They will.
Oh, yes. And actually, you don't have to put them in a store. You put them in a shed over there.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll pick up. And he said to me, he says, you know, when we were talking about out there, he wanted to take them, and I was holding them back. He says that's the way Marvin gets big prices for woods cattle.
Yeah. Took them in early.
I
got them
up. Well, damn, Cookie. Yeah, I got these beautiful steers, and they don't always get the bottom price. So
yeah. But the pricing on those, he's telling me, see, it was like an auction. See, I didn't know how they sold them. He's telling me they have like a ring. And they bring them out and auction them off, and you can have a different price for every cow. Different price. And I could change, and then, you know, you have good days and you have good markets and not. And I ask him, you know, can you get a price that you want? And he said, yes, sir, I'll bargain for them, just like that, I'll bargain for them. And I said, well, if you're not getting the price you want, he says, well, I'll just take them home. Now, I've done that many times. I'll just take them right home if I don't get what I want and bring them back next time.
in control.
Yeah, he's got that control.
Oh, when you all came back, he told me that it's already half filled with cows.
Yeah.
And he says most of them was from the Monday auction.
Yeah, yeah. And what they
bought them and just left them there and going to speculate on them.
Mm-hmm. You buy them on a Monday and leave them. I don't take them home, just leave them.
That's what Cookie likes, is it? Speculating, you know, buying a cow here and figuring out how much he can get on the market the next day or so if you keep them and feed them up for a while.
That's what he wants to do. Well, that's what he says he wants to do. He was going to get him 10 head of cattle this fall and put them out here and get him about $1,000 saved up and then start speculating like that on the market and make his money. My, I don't know about Cookie. I think he enjoys talking about a lot of that.
I'm going to tell you, we got to get rid of Miss Chitty. Yes, I stood down there and watched Ajax on that little truck. Nick had four little posts at each corner. Little soft wood posts.
Mm-hmm.
And it had two pieces of timber boards, nailed, but they were nailed on the outside.
Mm.
And Ajax, it was about up to his hip.
Yeah.
He looked down over the cabin. Nick's a pretty good driver, and he took these little, where the lane not level, you see,
mm-hmm.
you go over, and Ajax would sort of go with it, and Nick would take it easy, there by the little cedar tree. Got out of here where it was low, Ajax almost had to duck his head. Went on down with those two big horses on the side, they neighed all the way. Missy and the others, his old buddies, you see, on that side. And I could hear Missy neighing all up to the far corner. It was right there. And I just thought, they were in charge. I helped them. It was the first time I had a chance to feel sad. And Lord, I don't know how long. I'm always doing the pushing, you see. Bubba was there at that gate. Ajax was quiet. And he was just straining all the time. He was talking, he's turning around and putting his head down and throwing it, and there little Ajax. Going out friendly. I'll put in a good bit more than that, but no use going out. I didn't know this most of my life. I thought I could just look on, see things. But the way it turned out, I never saw anything. And I'd read a book and I'd say, well, I don't know how they see so much. I can't see it all. I can appreciate it after they see it. And it's just reasons, you see, that I have found that you have to learn to see, and that in order to see, you have to look. I used to think, you know, you could just be on the sidelines and observe. That's just insanity. But now you gotta clear the deck. You gotta disengage. And these days, to see, the institutions are so strong, you couldn't almost have to be a scholar. But you see, the scholars are still subject to stresses. And the people I've always worked with, off and on all the time, they lose their voice. They get hung up. The last month of the summer.
Well, when Miss Mary loses her voice, it's for a good reason. She's suffering, you know, but it's not going in a panic over something that doesn't need to be panicked about.
But the thing about it is, we all do it.
I don't think Jim does it.
I yeah, don't he think he ever will.
I decided I wanted to try to work with the tapes, and you know, I thought, well, I ought to have been out here long enough, I ought to be able to do something by now. So we started off the summer, and it started off fine, and except that I didn't listen to the tapes much. We just kind of, I talked to Mr. Weaver and met Miss Mary. Yeah, I had fun and listening on Miss Daisy sometimes. And those tapes were, well, while I was doing it, it was, you know, a lot of fun. But
you
I listened
to them.
Yeah, I listened to them, the people. And even then, it was the people, I think. And then I'd go back and try to listen to Barbara's tapes and I'd sit there. And sometimes I'd be interested in them, and sometimes they'd just kind of rattle along, and pretty soon I'd kind of start feeling sleepy. And I kept thinking, well, you can't just sit here and do this. You got to do something. So I'd go bake brownies. And I come back and I think, well, there are a lot of things I want to work on my typewriter. You know? So I'd work on something like that, like Miss Mary for a while, and then I thought, no, you don't have time to do this. You'll be working on Barbara. So I'd stop that and listen to Barbara some more. After a while, I think, well, maybe it's time to start supper. And I just couldn't listen to it. And it took, I just want to admit that I couldn't. And I kept saying, well, maybe it's this Barbara. Maybe if it was Mrs. Chitty or Mr. Weaver or something, it'd be a lot different. But I don't know. I'd sit there and look at those 10 tapes, 4 hours each. 11 tapes, 4 hours each, and I think
that's a lot of listening.
It's a lot of listening, because you can't just do it once, or I can't, you know. And I think, gosh. And what was funny, I got to the part with Mr. Eastman on it, and I listened to that report twice on the picket fence, and I could lay in bed at night and just absolutely have that by memory. Just the way he starts it out. Now, I like Lois Dixon. I like Lois a lot, you know. And at the end, he finishes this long story about the picket fence and all his sufferings, and just that priceless part where he says the man comes up and rubs his hand along the fence and says, you know, every one of these boards got four sides to it.
Yeah.
And that... Yeah, just, and then at the end, you know, after all his sufferings and his back aches and can't stand up after working on all day, he says, but I still love Lois.
Said, so don't you let this get to Lois. I still love her. Get it?
Yeah. Now that, I just about had that memorized. And then, but Barbara, I just,
well, now, Suzanne, when so what it does, you cook brownies every now and then, but pretty soon you got no remedy.
Yeah, I just kept trying to.
So you get in position as governess.
Yeah, you get in a position where you won't back out, And after a while, you can't.
In your mind.
Yeah, in your mind.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, well, then this, the Georgia business came up and all, and I thought, you know, maybe if I take off for a while, I can kind of work it out. And but I knew, I hadn't been home a day before I realized that wasn't going to work, just to get away from it for a while. Because if anything, I found out I couldn't even really talk to Faye about it, Faye Burke. And I thought, now if anybody's going to be able to understand what I'm talking about, it's going to be her, you know, the tapes. And I found I couldn't even say anything then about it, about what I wanted to do or planned to do, and I realized I just plain didn't have any plans. I just got wandering around this maze of tapes and it just kind of.
Well, now, just like the governor's, you see, Ray, I don't think you ever get too far along, bright educated, and then you get tied up.
Yeah, and some of the freshmen say, well, why didn't this stupid idiot just write a letter to the man and just admit that she's let things go too far?
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty hard thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
No, this is all against Debbie.
Yeah, he just...
That's admitting.
Yeah. Of course, now she goes, I guess, I think went to the point where I could see why how she couldn't do it. But I'm not really sure about that. But I could have at any point just said, okay, this summer I want to use my typewriter and visit Uncle Eddie and Aunt Moselle.
And just bring the tapes back out here and say, I can't make anything out of them.
Because the pressure was not from...
No,
of course, it was. You put it on yourself.
I just decided that this was going to be my test this summer, that I was going to see if I could do it. And if I couldn't, well, you know. And then it just, you know, kind of hard to face that I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And
so you were on a trial that didn't exist.
Yeah, that's what it was. I didn't have to do it. I mean, it's,
well, I mean,
I
you would didn't have to do that.
No, I just. What I, if I wanted to do anything, I could have taken, say, like Miss Chitty's last tape when I was here.
You were entranced with it.
I loved it. It just, you know, but I don't know. I might get hold of that.
Well, now, Suzanne, once you get stove up like that, it looks to me like my experience is everything contributes.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything just sort of.
Like what your mom expects of you.
Yeah. Well, she expects a degree, and she doesn't, I mean, it's never, she says, I want you to do what's going to make you happy, but you know it's there.
Yes.
That they, I've gone so far and put so much work into it, and they think that, you know, I'm intelligent and all this, and that I just ought to have it.
Just let nothing stand in between
yeah.
you and that degree. The earliest possible moment, isn't it?
Right, as soon as possible. And that's why she was so delighted that I got the assistantship, that it would mean that, you know, I could get my degree that much sooner.
Yeah.
Now, from my father, I don't hear a whole lot about the degree. He doesn't, before I went into English, he said there wasn't much future in teaching. You know. Well, he meant high school, but anyway. But from him, I get, you know, sort of the practical side of life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have money, because you get sick, you gotta pay the doctor.
Oh, I like his comments on the Georgia expedition.
Oh. Yeah, V's gonna have a heart attack the minute he gets started on this.
Mm-hmm.
A man works and saves and has something. I told Daddy, I said, well, Daddy, he said, why can't Bew just stay in Florida? He's got a house there. He's got all sorts of lakes to fish in. This is my father's idea of heaven, is living on a lake you can fish in all the time. He can't understand why Bew wants to leave. He says he'll get up there and get his place all fixed up and the house built. And he'll just work himself into a heart attack. And then that place will just sit there and go to ruin until somebody buys it for just nothing. So, you know, I was sitting in the car. As soon as I got off the bus, I hadn't been in the car more than 10 minutes before he started in on this. You know.
Is that what he was talking about when he was backing out of that place?
No, that was That was before I got there. This was when they picked me up at the bus station, and he was in this real four lanes of real heavy traffic. And Mama told him to move over one lane, and he moved over two lanes. got the wrong lane. But all the time he's driving, and Mama's trying to direct him. You see, he's telling me all these terrible things that are going to happen to you and my get up to Georgia. I just kind of sit there in the back seat, you know, wow. Been waiting at the bus station for an hour and a half anyway. Anyway, and he's got the idea that he's been cheated in life. Now he's taking the speedometer off of the car so it won't register gas miles. Because, you know, you just, the speedometer and you get your mileage in the system,
right.
He's just taking it off. Because my sister said, well, isn't that cheating? Mama says, yes. And she feels real bad about it, but she won't make him stop. But his reasoning is that the car manufacturers build a car so it won't last more than 3 years. And they've had a lot of trouble with this car. And, somehow or other this year they haven't managed to save up enough money to get a new one in the regular time. So he's just not registering gas mileage, so when he trades the car in, he'll get a bigger price. Yeah. And it's really funny. It's about, I guess it's really dishonest, but the odd thing is my father's not, or he never has been. Just right now he feels that the world is so constructed that a man has to do something like that in order to protect his family. Make sure that they have a retirement income, or they have money to do something when they retire. You know.
And he might lose his job any day.
Yeah.
Glenn.
Hmm? My father? Well, he...
No, I called him.
He's lived with his job for 4 years, just, you know, no raises since he had his eyes operated on. He thinks that's the reason they won't give him a raise, because he doesn't have good eyes. And he says any jobs he gets, contracts in Boeing, or have been of his own, he just creates the job. And he says now there's nothing left to create. They're just closing out the whole program. So what's he going to do? He can't understand it. Here he is. He's worked hard all his life. He served his country. He taught because people told him that was the way he could best help out, serve people, is teaching. So he taught for 7 years. And he finally realized he just can't raise a family on that, or he thought you couldn't, so he went into Boeing. And now, as he sees it, after 17 years, Boeing's just going to let him go, and he's too old to start over. So he, you know, it's pretty hard to live with.
Well,
for him.
So you get stove up on the barber tapes.
Yeah.
And then this adds to your...
Well, he tells me all this, and I can't do anything about it except just feel rotten, you know, because I know it must be horrible.
But you've got to quit.
Like,
you see, we're talking about rattling now.
Yeah.
So, you said.
Well, you got to be able to look at that, too. But it's...
But you got so many of these pressures on you, you see, that you can't afford to look.
And that's what you were saying about your friend. I mean, you know, that you, right now you couldn't look at them. You know, you could look at another friend.
Yeah, now if I'm at home, it's almost impossible to look.
Because
they keep getting your goat. You just keep getting your dander up, and you get mad. And then when you're involved emotional like that, you can't get yourself out of that look. You're too busy fighting, you know, getting back at them. Now I can see it a lot different up here.
And begin to see that you are looking at them.
You know, I don't look at my mother as like really possessing me. She's just a mother.
Uh-huh.
And that's a very nice thing to have.
Yeah.
Well, the thing
but
is, excuse me, go
you
got
to step back. Because she's right there and it's on top of you. You're fighting.
The thing
you
is,
can't look.
The thing is, it's not just that you can't look at your family. I mean, I think I can look at my family because they don't tie me as much as say other things. Just that when the compulsions or pressures build up from all different quarters, you can't look at anything.
Yeah.
It's not just you can't look at your family, you can't look at anything.
Yeah.
You
now, Suzanne, you got off into a thought frame of mine that to me was highly objectionable. Well, you weren't talking, and I can't abide people. I can't work with people who, you know, don't just pop off. I mean, you know, you may not be right, but you just keep going. Now, what is that frame of mind you get into where you...
Anybody does.
Oh, yeah.
What is it? Barbara called it keeping her own counsel, I think.
Yeah. You didn't talk, and when you did talk, you didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Now, what is that frame of mind you get into?
Well, I don't know. If I feel like what I'm going to... If I worry about things, then I figure, well, it's going to come out in the talk, and that's the last thing anybody wants to hear. Hear somebody complaining.
Hmm.
So you don't talk.
Self-pity.
Well, now... When was it? The other day when we were sitting here. That was your chance to talk. You didn't talk. You mean you complained?
Well, this would seem like what I'm just going to sound like. And it is, I guess, sometimes. Anyway, yes, the other day I just, you know, I still wasn't, I still kind of tied up. In it.
But it's the talk that releases.
Yeah.
Well, how are you going to get untied?
Go visit Miss Mary.
Mr. Weaver.
Yeah. Mr. Weaver's not so good sometimes. Miss Mary is. That does it for me.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
Yeah, but you go back and you get the same fix. You gotta talk to you. You gotta get somebody like me to talk to.
Yeah.
Well, you can look at it or not.
Well, yeah, you have to be able to look at it. I mean, you can. While it's going on, I could see what was going on. It's just I couldn't do anything about it. So seamless.
You went with us the night Barbara came in and talked after her horse thing. It's on the tape.
About the lunger? No, about the
horse show.
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, but it was all, you know, she was so tied up. We got about halfway, I won't go into it, but I said, all right, let's go for a ride. She couldn't open her mouth.
No.
She was just...
Yeah, the governor's got her.
It really was. It was fierce.
I heard you see that.
Well, yeah, in your notes, I just hadn't, and that's the tape you had to go over.
Yeah. Oh, it is?
Yeah.
And we rode up right around the corner. I can see it right now. And I didn't, you know, we just chattered just a little bit, you know, about the night. And she was so tense that she was on Molly. Molly felt it. And I was on Missy. And she whirled right on over the orange grove. Barbara, I can see her right now. She whirled Molly around and she said, let's go back and talk. Just like that. And we galloped all the way back in the moonlight. Came in here and I said to the guy, let's talk. She said, she said, you suppose it's too late to talk to guy. And I said, no, it's about 10:30. He got up, came in here.
In the notes I can see you said at one point she gets her voice back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now you see you've got so much on the tapes you can't handle them.
I don't know. I sit there and try to figure what am I going to do with it instead of.
No, I'm saying to you now.
Yeah.
You see, you couldn't handle your own case, and then you couldn't see Barbara in the same fix and handle it critically. I mean that's nothing unusual. I mean, you know, you can.
Well, I could see Barbara's case. I just didn't realize I was in the same fix.
Well, now you see. Now, I think of it. I go about the understanding of it in terms of the governor. And you see what Florence and them explained to me is Freud. That helped me at home. I don't think they have a usable. I don't think it's usable what their understanding is. But I use James's. I use the governess's understanding of Freud. And there, it's, you see, you get down to basic situation. Mm-hmm. You see, so much is expected of her from the governess, from the master. That pretty soon, you see, everything goes against her. And the pressure builds up. That's all there is to it. So much is expected of her from the master, or society, or your father, or abuse, or Nail, or your Jim, or me, or somebody else. You see? But you see, all that expectation is in your mind. Because as it worked out in the governor's master, I didn't even pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Now, that's a side of it I hadn't seen before, where you get stove up and then you these expectations of you start building up.
Yeah. You start living up, trying to live up to things that.
So kind of
sweet.
Yeah.
You probably felt nice.
Now you see, it's been hard on her, Faye.
Yeah, sure.
She looks, right now, she looks sort of fragile.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
She's not hardy like she normally is. She?
Yeah,
yeah. It's a trying thing, Rick.
Very trying. Take a lot out of you.
Oh, it does. You see, you can't handle it.
And you know, here she felt Faye's turned the house over to me this summer. She's not even teaching. Look at all that. And here, you know, subconsciously, I know that you felt. And it wasn't there.
Well, gosh, and you were giving me so much time.
And
God working with me. And I felt like, you know.
Well, you see, that's just your view of it. My view of it was that I was making use of you. You see, I got some of the most beautiful tapes from your influence on Mr. Weaver. He can, usually when he comes over here, he hurried to get back. Suzanne brought him over here, and we couldn't get him loose. We couldn't get him home.
But a beautiful summer, you see, and it was just in her mind.
Yes.
And we saw it coming, and I tried to say something, but I couldn't put it in words any stronger than I did because I didn't want to take it out from under her. You know, after all, she still wanted to try. She needed to try. And
right.
it happens to all of us.
And you see, it's been such a delightful time if you just spent your time
doing what I was doing at the beginning of the summer.
You see, that's a beautiful little report you had on Miss Mary. That was one of the finest, you see. Mm-hmm. That saw her in a light that we had never seen her.
What's interesting to me, just a little bit, is that we all have these little things that we blame things on, and it's perfectly normal. You know, you've got your laziness. And you're not lazy at all. There's nothing lazy about you.
Now, how about that?
I don't go along with that. I think I'm lazy.
No.
Suzanne, you've been lying to me ever since I've known you. The first summer, you were going to read something and send me some books. Remember that?
Yeah.
And you didn't even read. What'd you read?
Ship of Fools. And
never told me about it. You never made one single report on it, did you?
Yeah, I did. Not a report. I just told you that I thought it.
And she has
in a skimpiest little letter like Barbara writes.
And she has this little
gimmick. That was a really rotten letter.
And this little gimmick out here. I'm lazy, you know. It's nice to have a crutch. But it's not so.
Ask Jim.
No, it's not so. I mean, you make it that way, but it's really not so.
Mama tells me I'm nervous.
Yeah, you got these pressures. It's the governess. It's the governess.
It's in your mind.
Now, you don't have those symptoms.
Not yet.
How long does it take?
How many months we've got? 3 years?
She's done 3 years. That's what she said.
That face doesn't look right.
Can you understand
James without it? Hello?
I just can't.
Guy, you want to speak again?
Or you tell him I'm not here and take
Oh,
Nick!
Don't
tell me, I don't want to hear it. Ajax going to step right out.
You know that?
He's going to step out of the thing, you see.
You guys, you know when Nick called last night?
Oh.
I sat there in bed and just cried and cried, thinking about separating those two colts.
Sorry, I
That's the rottenest thing. I feel like we can do this. Just to separate. Dr.
Anderson at Gainesville Animal Hospital. Yeah.
Gainesville
Animal Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Probably just checked.
Who did
what?
Oh. That's
right, with Anderson. Bobby Anderson.
But he,
hold on
just a second. Look up
the
animal
hospital. He's up
on the border.
I'm starting to
come. Now you're right.
Out here.
Wait,
he's looking
up.
Looking
up the
water.
Number. How are you riding?
With who?
I mean, is that guy doing all right?
Good.
We had to be away, and we didn't expect, you know, what's up with you. Susan said that she had found some music. She had it.
372?
372.
5366.
5366.
Has a flat while Ajax is in that trailer.
Yeah.
Did Ajax go in easily? In a trailer.
It was on a trailer.
He
That's funny, that's right, he will. He'll fuss with Jim and I working on his hooves, but with Nick, I've seen Nick and stand right behind him and do it. I wasn't sure if he could still do it, you know, because it'd been so long, but I expect he could.
Are they going to make hay?
I don't know. I don't think they enjoy the, either one of them enjoy that chili.
No. Why don't you go make hay? This is a good thing.
Well, I'm going to tell you, the thing of it is, Faye, if you go over and make hay when they don't need you, you just stand around.
Well, he was raking.
Well, I don't have to. You can't help rake.
Well, I mean, but he said he wanted to go ahead and get it in. So.
Bail it. You got to bail it. And then the loading is right. It's not loading.
And then you can talk with him.
Oh, yes.
That'd be insane.
Oh, yes.
See, it'd be good to do that and talk with her.
Oh,
yes.
Are you waking up?
Yeah, I'm awake.
I don't want to ruin your life. Sure.
That's a little visit with Suzanne and Rick at lunch on Thursday, the 16th of September, 71, and they did what I had hoped they would do, or what she would hope Suzanne would do on Tuesday, on her Tuesday tape. And both are on this same reel, channel 2 right, around 900, the visit at lunch with Jim and Rick and Suzanne. Nick came after Ajax this morning, channel 2 right, around 900, towards the end of the reel, this Thursday, the 16th of September, 71, and the end of the visit with Rick and Suzanne at lunch this Thursday, the 16th of September, 71.